This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
All right, so just to review, first of all, welcome. We're glad you're here. If we have anybody who's new or a visitor, please linger after and say hello to somebody. We want everybody to feel welcome. I don't know about you, but masks just feel like this big thing that says, don't talk to me too, right? I mean, it's sort of a barrier, and we're trying to be safe and all, but we certainly want everyone to feel welcome. We want to help you plug in to the life of the church. Same is true for those of you online. If we have any new folks, please put in the chat. And those of you who are old time members, if you see somebody in the chat who looks new, I commission you to make sure that you talk to them and make sure they feel welcome into our community. All right. So to summarize where we started, some of you were here last week, some not. So we'll do a quick review of where we were, and then we're going to move into a conversation of what we want to talk about today. So the whole topic is about this notion of the Great Resignation. And we shared several different articles last week about what this is. And it's just the factual information that during the pandemic, almost 5 million people have resigned from the workforce. And they're not anticipating the majority of those will ever go back to the workforce. And there were lots of factors for that. And why is that the case? And then we talked about, we read sort of a mental health psychological article about what happens in trauma, what happens to our bodies, what happens to our hearts and minds when we have traumatic experiences in our life, and how at that point we sort of back up and reassess. And I think this is true in your own personal life. I mean, you can probably think about most recent traumatic experience that you've had to deal with and how it just makes you pause. You know, it makes us pause and think, what am I doing? What I want to do? Am I doing what God wants me to do? Is my life have meaning? Does it have purpose? Is it worth my life to do what I'm actually doing? And so that makes sense that you would have that sort of pause. Why it's coming out of the workforce, I'll leave for you to research. We covered a lot of that last week, so we're not going to dig into that this week. But during this pandemic, what is very clear is that the whole globe is taking a deep breath and asking itself, individually and collectively, what are we doing? And why are we doing this? And is this good? Is this what we want? Is this what we think is good and holy and wholesome? And so the underlying question is obvious. So first of all, also attendance in churches have scattered, of course, because of the pandemic first, but we also put it in the context of an ongoing decline in attendance in church for the last 30 years. And that's even true here at St. David's, a very slow decline, but there is just this kind of decline. And then how the pandemic sped that up. And we talked about some of the research that's out there about what they're expecting will happen with churches in the next 5 years. But we also reflected a little bit on our own practice, how our attendance has stayed. If you combine online and you combine on site, I got a new word. Mona went to a workshop and they said, it's not in person and online, it's on site and online. I mean, it's all in person. Right? I mean, you're really a person. I know it's shocking, but you all on a computer are actually persons. How about that? You're people. So we're either online, like you guys are, or we're on site, like you all are. And so our attendance has stayed pretty strong, but I have to say this second wave, this Omicron, you know, we look at the numbers every week. That's the fun part of our job. but we do. And this second one has had a bigger impact. Our numbers are just down. They haven't popped back up from Christmas. And Christmas was very, very small, I mean, comparatively to past Christmases, even during the pandemic. So I think what that says to me is people are getting really tired of this. And we're getting really tired of in, out, chalice, no chalice. What do we do? Are you coming up for communion? You're staying in your pew. Are you going to be in the building? Or are you going to stay at home? That thing is going on. So we put the context of that, but then the intersection that I want us to, that I'm really moving towards is this intersection of when the globe takes a breath and says, what are we doing? This is the church's sweet spot. I mean, this is what the church has been about since the beginning of time, is who are we? What are we doing? How do we know God? How do we love God? How do we serve God? How do we know each other? How do we love each other? How do we dig into the most important things in the world? How do we do something besides just entertain ourselves until we die? This is pretty much what the church is about, right? And so I feel like this is kind of our time, if we can figure out how to translate what we're about into that great need of the world. You know, running Frederick Buechner's thing, finding God's will is finding your heart's desire and the world's great need and seeing where those things intersect and get to work. That's it. It's that simple, which I think is great fun. I love that. Because, I mean, I don't know about you, but I can twist at 2 a.m. all day, all night long about, is this what God really wants? If you know, I remember going to my father when I was like 17, feeling I want to do what God wants me to do. And how do I decide? And my dad, a Baptist minister, said, say your prayers and do what you want. That was his counsel, which was his Southern version of what Buechner was trying to say, right? Say your prayers and do what feels good, what feels like this is a good use of your life. Because the way we say it with my kids is, the world's broken. Just find something and get to work on it. Anything that's broken, just get to work on trying to heal it and fix it. So that's the context for this whole conversation. And so how do we do that? Now, we did an introduction to the book of, the letter of Paul to the Corinthians, the first letter of Paul to the Corinthians. We talked about the Corinthian community, greatly conflicted, young church, growing fast, lots of conflict around power, about who's in charge, who's in control, based on who they were, based on who baptized them. And it annoyed Paul so much. He goes, I'm just glad I didn't baptize any of you goobers. And then he says, oh, no, wait, that's right. I baptized this one guy. Then didn't I baptize that family? I don't remember. That's what he says. That's a literal translation. I don't remember. But anyway, he says it's a silly argument, but it's an argument that we all know, right? I mean, that everybody's ever been part of any community, particularly church communities or family structures. No, there's this constant sort of struggle for value and worth and identity and knowing you belong and wanting to have some sort of influence and power. And it was also a community that was split economically. It was mostly a sort of lower class community with some wealthy people. Interestingly, they named the wealthy people, Paul does in the letter to the Corinthians, doesn't mention the poor people by name, which is interesting all by itself. But it's mostly a group of lower class folks, but that's still, that dynamic is still going on. And then one of the things that is being criticized with the Corinthians is that they are neglecting the poorest among them, making them come to the table last. And I remember the Eucharist was not just a little whiffy disc of bread and a sip of wine. It was a meal, right? So, and they were pushing people to the side and pushing them to the back. And so Paul wants to get to the bottom of this. So we talked about that, and I invited you to go read the book and then maybe read the 12th and 13th chapters of 1 Corinthians. So that's what I want to jump into today. So that's the summary. Did I leave anything out? Any questions of those of you who weren't here last week? It's fine if you want to ask a follow-up question so we have our context for the next part of the conversation. So we good? Ready? All right, so let's do this. Let's just dig in. And what I want to do is we're just going to go with the letter. We're not going to do the whole 12th chapter, but I want us to do the part that you heard. If you're 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock today, you've already heard this. And then you're going to hear 13 next week. And so let's just talk, let's see what Paul's talking about. So he's chastising, he's encouraging, he's trying to get them to stop their fighting. And he's trying to do it all with a letter, which, as you know, the effectiveness of your own emails when it comes to highly conflicted information, it's just not the perfect medium. Well, neither is a handwritten letter, right? And it takes weeks to get there and weeks to respond. So he's not with them. And I think that's significant. I mean, he's trying to convince them of this without being in the presence. And so I'm just going to read through, just so, because I'm mic'd and everybody can hear, I'll just go ahead and read these first 11 verses. Now, concerning spiritual gifts, brothers and sisters, I do not want you to be uninformed. You know that when you were pagans, you were enticed and led astray to idols that could not speak. Therefore, I want you to understand that no one speaking by the Spirit of God ever says, let Jesus be cursed, and no one saying Jesus is Lord except by the Holy Spirit. Now, there are a variety of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are a variety of services, but the same Lord. There are a variety of activities, but it is the same God who activates all of them in everyone. To each is given a manifestation of the Spirit for the common good. To one is given through the Spirit the utterance of wisdom, to another the utterance of knowledge according to the same Spirit, and another faith by the same Spirit. To another gifts of healing by the one Spirit, to another works of miracles, another prophecy, another discernment of spirits, another various kinds of tongues, and to another the interpretation of tongues. All these were activated by the one and same Spirit who allots to each one individually, just as the Spirit chooses. I have to correct myself. That was the lesson for last week. This week continues, all right? So let's just keep going. All right, so continuing with verse 12. For just as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of the body, though many, are one body, so it is with Christ. For by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, Jews and Greeks, slaves or free, and we are all made to drink of one Spirit. For the body does not consist of one member, but of many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less a part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, that would not make it any less part of the body. And if the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? And if the whole body were an ear, where would be the sense of smell? But as it is, God arranged the organs in the body, each one of them as he chose. If all were a single organ, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, yet one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need for you, nor anything, again, the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, the parts of the body which seem to be the weaker are indispensable. And those parts of the body which we think are less honorable, we invest with greater honor. And our unpresentable parts are treated with greater modesty, which our more presentable parts do not require. But God has so adjusted the body, giving the greater honor to the inferior part, that there may be no discord in the body, and that the members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all suffer together. And if one member is honored, all rejoice together. Now you are the body of Christ, and individually members of it. And God has appointed to the church first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, workers of miracles, healers, helpers, administrators, speakers of tongues, various kinds of tongues. All are apostles. Are all apostles? Are all prophets? Are all teachers? Do all work miracles? Do all possess gifts of healing? Do all speak in tongues? Do all interpret? But earnestly desire the higher gifts. We're going to hold the last verse of this chapter right before we get to the next chapter. So we see what Paul's doing. First, he lists kind of the gifts of the Spirit loosely. Then he dives into this body analogy in depth. I mean, he goes into a very detailed description of this body and then goes back to the gifts of the Spirit and begins to articulate what they are. Because one of the conflicts was, do you have the cool gifts, you know, the right gifts, the higher gifts, the ones that are to be most coveted, or are you just doing the boring stuff? So he plunges into this image of who that community was, what that community was like. Now, it's a jump for me, to try to push us into this, and I know that, but it's because we're not actually a church in profound conflict, which I am super grateful for. We are not, really. I mean, that is just one of the great gifts that's here at St. David's. We have our disagreements, but when we have them, they are open and honest, and I think we navigate them well, and then we reconcile and we move on. That's true, I think, on every level, the levels of the church in which I am involved, and at least that's what people report to me. And I will certainly tell you that is the way it is on our vestry level. We'll wrestle, we'll have our good conversations, but then we come to votes almost the vast majority of the time. Our votes are unanimous. And if there's a large group or even a small group of people who are really not wanting something, we'll pause and breathe and find out what that is, because we want to be guided by the Spirit. So I'm not trying to use this text to fix something that I feel like is broken in the life of our particular congregation, but I just like this image. I think it's really powerful to think about the impact that the pandemic has had on our body, on the body of our church. You know, and so I would put it this way. St. David's for at least the whole time I've been here, and I think for far longer, and I think it's directly related to the size of downtown Austin, is a very disparate body. I mean, it's a very disparate community. We are spread out all over the city. We have people who come from 43 different zip codes who claim St. David's as home. That's a drive, right? That's a lot of people who are willing to go a long way to get to a very particular version of church. But that makes us very disparate. We're all over the place. And this, I will guarantee you, this is no church for a rector who has a whole lot of unmet control needs. You know, it's like it is no place to be. You would be in the hospital pretty quickly, right? It's better for those of us who kind of are negligent about control. Because you just go, oh, sure, go do that. Yeah, that's fine. Gus, you're in charge of that. Call me if you need me, and don't call me. So that's the first mark of it, though, I think, is that we're very desperate. Not desperate, that's the wrong word. Not desperate, disparate, right? Are we desperate? I have to ponder. That's a slip. We have to contemplate that. So we're spread out. We're all over the city. Now, combine that with the growing size of this city, the difficulty with getting to downtown, which we talk about all the time. Before pandemic, we were talking about, when do we do children's choirs and when do we do family programs and do we really have to drive all the way in here for a 1 hour meeting? You know, those kind of conversations were already going on before the pandemic. Pandemic hit, we learned how to use technology that is going to make that question much more on front burner. We'll be asking that question for every meeting we ever have from now on. Do we really have to come all the way in downtown to have an hour long meeting? So that'll be something that we have to sort out. So that's the nature of the church. Then add to it the pandemic that has pushed us all into our own homes, right? And pushed us away from each other, pushed us away from family, pushed us away from families, of funerals, pushed us away from weddings. And we had a funeral Saturday. Many of you were at that funeral. And I think it's the largest funeral gathering we've had since the pandemic came. And everybody was doing great. Everybody behaved. Everybody had their masks on. And I think it's because we've learned so much more than we knew at the beginning about how to do this in a low-risk way. But that it was unusual by how many people were there. I noticed that. So that is a very different experience than we were doing before the pandemic. So the body has been pushed out of the building and pushed out of community with each other. And we're trying to figure out how to do community in new ways. You know, I mean, last week, y'all, some of y'all that were online talked about that struggle. Some of you talked about how great it felt to be online, that that's how you actually came into this community. And it's how you have met people and made friends. Others who were actually in the room said that this is very frustrating to them, this online thing, or they were intimidated by it, don't want to learn it, can't, or don't feel like they know how. And so we've had very disparate opinion experiences of this as well. So with this image of the body and all the parts, which I don't think we have to parse it out too deeply because I think it's a very obvious metaphor, right? And thinking about your own spiritual gifts and what you bring to the community and what you gain from the community in the context of the pandemic. And as we move forward, I'm just really curious about how we're going to do this and how do we do it now? We're all doing the same thing, but we've been doing it for 2 years. Well, as soon as this wave passes, I was saying that today. I said it in the narthex. I was talking to somebody because, you know, we're back to no chalice. And I said, here's my prayer for the week. All those that the rates tumble like they're doing in other parts of the country. And next Sunday we'll have chalice bearers and we'll, I don't know. So obviously we can't just sit around and wait for that to resolve. So how do we do this as we move forward? And what are the implications of Paul's writing for us as we move forward? That is actually the question. And I would love to hear you opine about that. If you're in the room, we ask you to come to the microphone, but I do ask you to wear your mask at the mic because that's a shared vapor space, okay? So if you come to the microphone, please keep your mask on. I don't care if you wear a mask or not if you're online. So, all right, so that's the question. I'd love to hear you opine about it.
I'll speak up with sort of a silly little example. This is Jane Jenkins.
Thank you, Jane.
I mean, here we go. We'll try and see how it looks. Okay. I was listening to you and really enjoying it. And then all of a sudden I lost the connection. So I felt separated from the body. And then I thought, oh, I'll just get right back on. However, my internet was out because they're working on my cottage with construction today. So I'm panicking because I cannot connect to this body that I get so much from every Sunday. But then I remembered I have a hotspot on my iPhone. So I used my iPhone to get back on to the Zoom meeting and reconnect with the body. And so, like I said, it's kind of a silly example, but I felt separated, but I figured out how to get connected.
Thank you, Jane. No, I don't think that's a silly example at all. I think it's a powerful metaphor. Might even be better than Paul's for the modern world, right? This is, I was connected, but I'm not connected. You know, there are various devices. There are apples, but none is greater than another. Right? What did you tell me when we were starting that the prediction is there'll be 50 different wearable devices on? It's like, oh, just kill me now. Please tell me I don't have to do that. Right. But I think that's a good metaphor, Jane. Thank you.
Welcome.
Oh, wait, you got video. There she is.
I know. I even got video now.
All right. Very good. Yeah, come. I know that feels very foreign and formal, but it's just so everybody online can hear what you're saying. That's
yeah. So I'll offer something. So I think what I noticed with the meditation group that we've been going on since the pandemic, you know, we went from typically three people meeting to about 15, 20, you know, and
okay.
What I see is that there's a great desire to see and be seen. Okay. And when you speak about the body and having different components or different roles, that is to be seen, see me as who I am, you know, and when you break patterns, you immediately start reevaluating who am I and what is my purpose, and you see things differently. And what I think the pandemic is asking us is to the term of religion, to reconnect. And to me, to reconnect is to go back to seeing each other, just to see me for who I am, my gifts, my shortcomings, you know, my aspirations, my flaws, and be able to see you in right. the same way.
Right.
So to me, that is kind of what I feel is the role, is that deep desire for reconnecting and be seen again.
Good, good. Thank you. Did everybody hear that? You felt good about it? Okay, good. He's talking about the role of the church is to help people be seen. That's the purpose of religion, is to reconnect, and that we want to be seen. That's what we've been missing. That's what we want, the video. We don't see Jane's face, right? So that she can, and we know, she knows we see her, and hopefully that's a wholesome and holy thing that you've been seen, and to recognize that you're here and you're known. You know, that's actually the root word of religion, right? The Latin religare, right? Ligament, ligare, same word is in ligament, right? And then to connect, and the ligaments, what do? They connect, right? They connect. So it's to reconnect. That's the definition of what we do. Yes. Oh, great. Thank you. Donna.
I'd like to add an observation. Okay. I too find it very important to see everybody, as well as hopefully giving people the chance to look at me. And one of the benefits of the Zoom meeting is that we do have the Zoom. We can look at each other, those at least who turn on the video. I miss, however, getting the occasional glance at the people who are out in the congregation, as it were. And yeah. That is a problem that I experience with the online worship service. Now, mind you, I'm terrifically grateful that there is an online worship service, because last week, Roy and I had been tested for COVID because we had potentially been exposed, and we didn't want to put anybody at risk. We didn't have symptoms, but we didn't want to put people at risk, so we stayed home. And I saw the altar party, and very beautiful it was. I saw Eric at the organ, and very delightful that was. But I didn't get to see, I was going, okay, is there anybody actually in the building? And it wasn't until the hymn started that I heard the voices and said, yes.
Those are piped in voices. There's actually no one else in the building. It was just us. That's actually where we started this. Y'all remember that? That where online worship started was just the participants, and it was pre-recorded on Thursday, and then we broadcast it on Sunday. That was the most depressing season of my life as a priest. I'll confess that. Because I'm like you, Donna, I need the room. I need people in the room. I need bodies in the room. I need voices. I need, that energy that comes from being together. So I don't know if I can do this without disconnecting, but I'll let you see who's in this room. Say, yay. Everybody wave. There we go.
Yay. See? Yay. Yeah. Hey, good to see you. Good to see you.
See, so there are people here. We're not faking it entirely. There. Is that okay? Good.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's good, Donna.
I do enjoy when they when you're out in the congregation distributing the communion, the camera does pan into right. And I get to see the parishioners, and I go, is that so-and-so?
Scouring the crowd. That's great. Yes, come on up. We have somebody coming to the mic now. Hang on.
Yeah, it's Brian Plater behind the mask. So I was just wondering, as you mentioned, new members joining through the online community, whether, a lot of us come to this space, even though it's difficult to get to for a lot of us. And it's because of the rich preaching and the deep dives on religion and a lot of the things that other churches may not offer as well. And so maybe we should be looking at this as a big opportunity now that you've learned a lot about online and how do we bring people more easily here that might not travel here. So
right.
There's something to think
That's
about.
Good. Absolutely. So for those of you getting here, Brian suggested this is an opportunity to learn, to learn what we've learned from this. How do we engage people in different ways? How do we build community in ways we never have before? Diane.
Good morning, everybody. Diane, I don't want us to underestimate the challenges ahead. And I appreciate, Chuck, that we're having this forum and discussion because there are people who prefer online. There are people that really need the on-site to get it. And I love that language of Paul about the different parts of your body, because I think for me, these are difficult times for lots of reasons, not just the pandemic. But as you mentioned, attendance was going down. There's a lot of problems in the world today that we need to talk about. And I think we all need to think about what we can bring to that. And I loved what you said about your dad. Just do that one thing that you really like. But it is a challenge. And so it'll be interesting to see how we as a body at St. David's can respond to that, because there's so many conflicting needs.
Right. Thank you, Diane. I think that, why as you're walking, come on to the microphone. I think you're right. That conflicting needs is a huge part of it. I can tell you in every leadership conversation we have in the church, it's which, Diane mentioned all the social ills that we're dealing with. Which ones do we focus on? How do we choose? How do we pick the thing, as Dad said? How do you pick the thing that you're going to work on? Because there are so many things that need the voice of the church to speak to. Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Blair. Along those same lines, I was thinking about how vulnerable we all are in this and how much pain and craziness we've all gone through. And one thing that I appreciate that I feel like that the body of our church is experiencing is more depth and more honesty in our vulnerability, and that we're able, and I've seen this in a lot of different meeting places that we've been together. And it's very refreshing to be so real and honest and open and to trust each other with our difficulties. And I think that we have plunged deeper, and I'm very appreciative of that.
Thank you, Blair. Thank you. I think that's a really important point. Going back to Paul's analogy, if you think about it as an analogy of the emotional life, I think we all kind of present certain members of our body, if you will, get on display, and others that we're more modest about and we hide.
and our lack of vulnerability, you know, the things where in our life is not, are not together, you know, things where the wheels are kind of coming off, or that we're embarrassed about, or that we feel like we're sinful, or we're scared, or we're sad, or we're depressed or lonely. You know, we don't generally lead with that when we're out in public, you know, but maybe this is an opportunity, like you said, for us to be a little more transparent about how it actually feels to be in the world right now, how it feels to be. So like, I'm going to stumble on this because it's how it feels to be perpetually connected and yet still feel disconnected. You know, I mean, have your hand, the phone in your hand. I was teasing Caroline last night. She came home for dinner. Even at, I mean, she knows we don't do phones at the table. She's 20 years old. I've come phone. I was like, child, I think if I took that phone away, you'd stop breathing. I think your life support system is in the palm of your hand, you know, but it, and yet still there's loneliness and isolation and somehow connected and yet not at all. Yeah, come on, Mona.
So one of the things I appreciate about St. David's is our commitment to social justice. And so when I see this passage here in Corinthians, it always wants, it prompts me to ask the question, what bodies, you know, that as the body of Christ, that we are made up of many bodies and that all bodies matter, you know, and part of our work is to ensure that Black bodies, trans bodies, you know, women's bodies, homeless bodies. And so I just kind of put that out there as well, that the body politic, you know, so to speak. And so I appreciate that about St. David's and that we recognize we have more work to do around valuing different bodies. And so our anti-racism task force is a piece of that work. So I just offer
good,
that.
Good. Yeah, I like it that you brought it into literal bodies, you know, that this means something for actual physical bodies of people. So y'all are flagging, there's somebody online who is, Diane.
Hi, I just wanted to bring up a technical impediment to joining the St. David's community, and that is the sign-up process online. It's occasionally just goes berserk. And this morning, it was one of those times for me where it went berserk. And I found myself, you know, angry and upset that I wasn't going to be able to join this forum this morning. And and it's happened more than once. And I know it happens to lots of other people too. And I would just suggest that somebody take a look at how to streamline that process so that the sign-in for Zoom recordings is apparent to, and you actually get signed in.
Right.
So that's just a technical problem that's been going on for a long time that really needs to be solved now that we're depending more and more on Zoom links.
Thank you, Diane. And we accept that. And Mona and Angela and I will follow up on that. I will tell you, we have banged our head against the wall on this a lot. I'll confess that part of the problem is we're using ACS, which is Automated Church Systems, which is the best technology 1997 had to offer. Yeah. And so we're aware. I don't have a quick fix for that. And you're right, it does seem to go berserk. I don't have enough technical knowledge to even speak to this, honestly. But my own experience is sometimes it's streamlined, it goes right through and I'm fine. Other times it just stands up and yells at me for some reason. I'm like, what? I'm doing exactly what you told me to do. So it is frustrating. And I do acknowledge that. And so that is one particular technical thing we can look into and see if we can fix. But I think that reality is a constant, permanent part of the work of community, is because technology is changing so fast and it's moving so quickly and there's so many demands on it. The last time I got annoyed was trying to watch football yesterday while I was doing some other work. Hulu, too many people like Hulu. It was slowing down, it was jamming up, it was twirling that little thing in the middle. I was like, see? And so it's all over the place. And that's just, I think that's a chronic part of the reality of this way that we connect with each other. Are there others online? Did I miss a? Thank you all in the room for pointing out who's there. Right, that's good. All right, so I think this leads us, so I think we get the analogy, and I think we've embodied the analogy at St. David's, to use it quite literally, and we've named some of the pieces that are still out there that we have to sort out. I've heard you talk about some of the benefits is an increase in honesty and vulnerability about it, and also some of the challenges of both technical and relational challenges of does this work, you know, and then that ongoing conversation that we're going to have of making sure that the tools don't become the content, right? Am I saying that right? That we need tools that further the work of the church, not the other way around, right? It's almost like the building, all right? So almost like our old church, which we raised $5 million to work on. We've been designing the work now for a couple of years. Oh, and by the way, I'm coming to ask you for 20% more. It's coming in the next few months because we have to, because that's how much the cost of this building has gone up in the amount of time it's taken us to actually get construction documents ready because of all the things, you know why, right? This is consuming a huge amount of time and creativity of a large group of people because we've inherited this spectacular building. But finally, St. David's is not, we're not a historic preservation society, right? I mean, that we have an old building, but we are not an old building. We are a body of Christ. We are a community. And the work that God has given us to do launches out of this old building, and it takes place in this old building. But finally, the work is bigger than even that. So it's kind of that balancing of how much time and how do we juggle the sort of demands of the tools. And if I may, this may get me some angry emails, but if I may, the building is a tool, right? The demands of the tool requiring some love and affection and a lot of investment right now, but where it intersects with the actual work of the life of the church, which is what we do together when we're together and what we do out in the world. So let's jump then. Let's go where Paul goes, because I think there's something here. Again, he was talking about conflict, so there's a leap perpetually through this conversation. But look where he goes next. And the next passage is 1 Corinthians 13 and the very last verse of 1 Corinthians 12. And where most of us are familiar with 1 Corinthians 13 is from weddings. Yeah, say that loud. It's okay, weddings, right? It is the Orthodox treatment of weddings. You must read 1 Corinthians 13 if you're allowed to be married in the Episcopal Church, seems like, because it's in there all the time. And it's an appropriate use of the text because it talks about love, but it's utterly out of context. This has nothing to do with weddings at all. It has nothing to do with romantic love between two people. It has to do with spiritual gifts. So he's for 12 chapters, he's been confronting sin. He's been confronting selfishness and greed and pride and sort of all the sort of cardinal sins. He's been working his way through, gets to this analogy of the human body as the response to that. Stop, just do your part. God has given you a thing, I've given you a job. It's your role in the body. So just do that and do it well. And don't worry about trying to be something you're not. But then he goes to the highest spiritual gift. So he lists off all these spiritual gifts. And by the way, there's some debate and discussion about, is this an exhaustive list of the gifts of the Spirit? And I would say, no. He's just, because of the way he's writing about everything, and the way he started frustrated, and you know, and he couldn't even remember who he had baptized, I think he's doing the same, because he's annoyed, he's frustrated. I think he's doing the same thing. He's just listing off these various gifts. And I'm sure the list is longer than that, right? You know, it's just like body parts. I mean, he lists off some body parts. There are obviously more body parts. But then he's building to this culmination of what actually drives Christian community. What is at the heart of Christian community? And so he says at the end of chapter 12, it's chapter 12, verse 31b. You know, so when there's a second sentence in a verse, they put a letter on it. So 12:31b, and I will show you a still more excellent way. So he's done all the concrete stuff. And now he says, if I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love. Sorry, I'm reading the RS.
Excuse me.
Yes, that's okay.
No, I'm sorry. I forgot to mute.
Oh, okay. That's why I thought you were about to ask me a question I was going to answer. I'm reading from the Revised Standard Version. What you'll hear in church is the New Revised Standard Version, and you may have the New International Version in your hand. So there are different translations. But so I'm just reading the RSV. If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I am a noisy gong and a clanging cymbal. If I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all that I have, and if I deliver my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love is not jealous or boastful. It is not arrogant or rude. Love does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice at wrong, but rejoices in the right. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. As for prophecy, it will pass away. As for tongues, they will cease. As for knowledge, it will pass away. For our knowledge is imperfect and our prophecy is imperfect. And when the perfect comes, the imperfect will pass away. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I gave up childish ways. For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall understand fully, even as I have been fully understood. So faith, hope, love abide, these three. But the greatest of these is love. So you see where he went with this. He went to that big, he went to the heart of the faith. That finally, as our presiding bishop, he has one sermon. He says himself, I have one sermon. And of, you know, they generally say preachers, by the time they die, they've written five sermons. He says he's only written one. And he just keeps preaching it. Reminds me of that old joke, you know, with the preacher who preached the same sermon 2 weeks in a row. People are like, oh, that boy repeating. And then he preached it again the next week. And they're like, oh, okay, three times, you know, biblical number. Then it's four times, five times. Finally, the vestry met with him and said, we pay you a lot of money. You've re-preached the same sermon five times, and it's time for you to write a new sermon. He said, well, you do what I said in the first sermon, and I'll write you another sermon. Right? So you've just got to keep working on it. The presiding bishop says, one sermon, and this is it. This is it. It is the role of love that drives every single thing. Because if you think about all the conflict that Paul's trying to address in that church, what love, true love, agape love, this ferocious choice that we're invited to make, that I will love you by God, sometimes through gritted teeth, I will love you, I will choose this, how it changes the whole dynamic, in any church conflict, if love is the highest value and the highest expectation that we're going to love one another. So that's how it fits, I think, in the context of the Corinthian community and in churches in the modern world that are in conflict. I'm just really curious about, so what are the implications of love driving the show for us at St. David's as we move forward in the context of everything we've just been talking about? Context of online, context of on site, context of all the dilemmas of working in Austin, all the different lists of things that are really important in the world that the church needs to speak to. And so how does love drive that show for us? Now I want to hear what y'all think about that. Yes, Donna.
I've been thinking about this in the course of our discussion that we were having. I give St. David's credit for being the kind of congregation where if I were to, in the course of the worship service, something really hits me and I break down and sob and keep it up for a while. I think St. David's is the sort of church where people would give me some tissues and a hug or at least an elbow bump and express...
Oh, baby.
You know, they wouldn't say, oh, you awful person. You know, save that for some time when you're not in. There are congregations that do that. There are congregations that do. I think St. David's would be a church that offers comfort if that's what is needed. So what occurs to me when at least part of the community is taking place on Zoom, we're missing something important if the Zoom connections are not also a place where people can be vulnerable and break down and weep if that's where they happen to be. And if that takes place, it would be a highly desirable thing if there were a structure somehow, somebody out there somewhere says, okay, it's my job to make contact with this person because this person needs a hand right now. End of comment.
Good, good. Thank you, Donna. And I will tell you, as a priest at the church, what you just said happens in a very informal and community-driven way. Generally, if there is a Zoom gathering and somebody is clearly really having a hard time, we find out about it. The clergy find out about it, and we try to respond. I mean, not every time, obviously, but I feel like the community is very responsive to that kind of expression of truth in somebody's life. And if it just, you know, if it's an emotional response to what you're talking about and it's kind of complete right there, then that kind of reporting doesn't happen. But if it's clearly an ongoing thing, it's a dilemma in someone's life that's not going away, we have found out a lot of those, and we've responded when we hear about them. But I think you're right. I think St. David's, and I've never served a church where you would be mistreated for breaking down in the pew. But I think you're right, particularly. I think people are responsive here. Yeah.
Hello. So.
Okay. Yes. Edith. I'm sorry. I just can't look in three places at once. So no. Is it Edith? Is that who? Okay. Yeah.
So I put in an online prayer request when it was like on a holiday. It was either on like a Saturday or something. And I thought, well, they may not get it until Monday. Within 5 minutes, I had a response. I was amazed at how fast that was. And I think in our Zoom groups, if anybody looks like they're having a hard time or whatever, I think there's always somebody that is supportive in the Zoom groups that I've been in. So, and I think that, and back to the first question, I think that in all of these things that St. David's is dealing with, the technical, the how do we do this, how far do you have to drive? And I think love infuses all of those answers. I think that, you know, how do we serve the most people in the most caring way? I think that's all our answers. I do.
Good. Good. Thank you. I think you're right. I think it's how we discern, you know, what does love demand right here? And my goodness, if there is a voice that needs to be heard in the world, it is a voice that addresses the issues that are before us that is not shrill and that is not accusatory and not ferocious, but instead we do this because we love. We love the body because we love, because those are the demands of love. And so we're thinking about the margins. You know, I mean, that's one of our articulated values is engaging the margins, the boundaries of the world. Sort of, you know, it has two foci. You know, one is actually we build a church where we have a proper boundaries. That's really important, where you are safe here, where the clergy are not going to misbehave and no one else is going to misbehave. You're going to be treated with respect and dignity. And also, who's on the outside? Who's on the edges? Who needs to be seen? Who needs to be heard? Who is voiceless and needs a voice? And I mean, we've talked about this before, but I mean, just think about physically where St. David's is sitting. I mean, we are amongst the boundaries, you know, and in one block, we've got federal government on the north. We've got massive retail to our west. We've got entertainment industry and a bunch of wild children hanging out to our south. And then all around us, we've got the poorest people in the community. We've got our homeless neighbors sleeping on our block at night. You know, so it's, you talk about the boundaries. They're just right here in this intersection. Yes, Darren.
One quick thing. If you've never got around to reading Bishop Curry's book from 2020, Love is the Way, I would commend it to you. It is
very good.
It's a really good book. When I think about a lot of the examples he gave, and then I always fall back to our baptismal covenant when it says do you agree to respect the dignity of every human being?
Yes.
And I think that's a huge sort of speaking to what you were saying, role of us as Episcopals, if you in fact sign on to the baptismal covenant, and I hope if you come in that you do, then, you know, are we acting in that way amidst all the strife and blame and everything that keeps rising up? Do we choose instead to make decisions based on respecting the dignity, you know, of every human being? And that's a different spot than us. I mean, I've been through, you know, a number of different sects in Protestantism, and we don't all sign on for that.
No, it's true. It's true. Thank you. I think that's an important, and, you know, that's an important articulation that I think is unique. It's, yeah, I know it's unique liturgically, perhaps, for us, because the baptismal covenant was put into the 79 prayer book. I mean, it's not in the 28 prayer book. So that language that is specific to us, and there are other denominations that may have something similar. But that, just repeating that over and over for the last 40 years, has actually changed the nature of the church. Just that promising, will you do this? I love how you said, if you're going to sign on, this is the job description. You know, this is what it looks like. This is what we expect. And love drives that show all the way through. So I guess we're getting close. We're close to the end, and we want to wrap up. So the first thing I want to say is that is your command. That is what's expected of you. And that's what I expect as your rector, is that we are going to be a place where love is driving the show. And we're going to get that wrong every single time, right? I'm going to get it wrong every single time. But that's the expectation. That's the bar. That's the job description. And we'll hold each other accountable to that. You know, is what we're doing loving? Is how we're presenting ourselves in the world reflecting the love of Christ in the world? How we're reflecting that here in this property? What are we saying out into the online world? And are we being true to the gospel of love? And is it? And the other thing, though, I also want to say is, and this is not aimed at anyone. It's really not. It's a principle. As a matter of fact, it's a principle that my brother-in-law said 15 years ago. It didn't have anything at all to do with the pandemic. But we were just talking about sort of the decline in church attendance 15 years ago. And what do we do? And how people are choosing, yeah, I'm just going to stay home. I'm going to stay home. I can be a good person by myself. You know, all the arguments why you stay home. And none of that's incorrect. But his response to that is, yes, but finally, it is impossible to kick down the gates of hell from your couch. Yes, that is right. So literally, not your couch, but that idea that I can sit back and live out the principles of the gospel without engaging the world around me is just not true. It's not possible. Because finally, the gospel is a social gospel. I don't mean that in the 19th century version of that, although I often do mean it in the 19th century version of that. But it is a social God. We are engaged in a body. So we're coming right back to Paul, that we somehow must be connected to the body. We somehow must be engaged. And I think virtually is absolutely connected to the body. And I think sitting in this room on site is absolutely connected to the body. But that's the thing that's really non-negotiable, is it won't work at all if we don't stay engaged and if we aren't drawn out of our comfort zones, our couch, and get us up on our feet doing the work of the gospel in the world. So we got to stop, because some of us got to go to worship. I got a few minutes if anybody wants to linger and chat. Thank you all very much. Wait a minute. Next week is the annual parish meeting, right? So the way we're doing that is it's the virtual part is a webinar style. So it won't be engagement because we have a slate for vestry. That's what we ended up with, is five folks. And we have a slate for diocesan council. So we're not going to have ballots and, you know, so it'll be kind of an acclamation vote. So it's really just going to be more of a presentation. We will vote. Those in the room will vote. And then you'll hear from various ministries, senior warden, junior warden, the things the canons require us to review. And then we're also going to show you a video about, it's sort of a highlight of a ministry that has just come to fruition, which we're really excited about. It's called an International Outreach Endowment Fund, which we're really looking forward to telling you about. And that'll be what's going on. And I'll give some highlights. My sermon next week will be sort of the State of the Union kind of thing. And then the next week we have the Right Reverend Robert Wright, who's the Bishop of Atlanta, compelling, charismatic guy. I think you're going to like him very much. He does this intersection as well as anyone I know in the church. And he's a kind of an activist bishop. I mean, he is personally very involved in the city, very involved in sort of city council level decision-making, government level in Georgia, very involved in stuff around the death penalty. I mean, so it'll be really interesting to hear his engagement of that in his life as a bishop. So plan on coming to that, okay? All right. Then why are you still here? Get out of here. Thanks, everybody. And again, if you see somebody walking out you don't know, stop and say hi to them and introduce yourself.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.